You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya,
Anthasiaklia, Talitin, Homasquemasteo. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Leanin' with Jeff. I hope you guys are having a wonderful start of the afternoon. I am back with another movie review. Today, I'll be discussing Pitch Perfect with a new guest on my show, so I hope you guys are excited for that. Shindig is coming up, guys, so please stay tuned with some more information about that. Shindig is one of our biggest events held at CITR, and it's a battle of bands, so you guys can just come along. It's a five-week event, 4 weeks of competition, and then the final week declaring the winner, so please stay tuned for that. CITR is going to be holding up multiple events through this month, as Halloween is coming up, along with next month, which is the Shindig. So I hope you guys can make it, and I promise you it will be fun. Before further ado, why don't we get through the ads and the PSAs and we'll get right to the show. So I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
Lean in, listeners, because you're not going to want to miss this. An underground alternative to the Vancouver International Film Festival has emerged in the form of Off-VIF. It is a first edition of the yearly counter-program taking place during VIF, and it all kicks off at the Rio Theatre on October 7th at 8:15 p.m. The headliner is the North American premiere of King Baby. This local concoction premiered in Rotterdam, played all over Europe to rave reviews, and is finally coming home. Described as
a brilliant, insightful, and hilarious fable.
And as
an astute reflection on the decline of male power.
You're not going to want to miss this one. So head down to the Rio on October 7th and join the fun. You can find tickets on the Rio website, and we also have discounted and free tickets available. No one's turned away. And remember, folks, off-VIF is off-capitalism.
The time has come for the Vancouver Outsider Arts Festival. Here to showcase the work of visual artists and performers outside of mainstream art institutions, Vancouver Outsider Arts Festival strives to provide a platform for artists to share their unique perspectives and artistic visions with the community. From October the 11th to the 13th, come to the Roundhouse Community Arts and Recreation Center, brought to you by the Community Arts Council of Vancouver. And let's not forget that the festival is free for all. So find out more at www.voaf.ca.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
Mm-hmm. Iloisin pian sointujauneet.
Throughout the history of music, the most happiest chords have been in constant church by composers and musicians. Music reflects the emotions of human beings, and the pursuit for well-being is seen also in the arts of music. With today's modern technology, it's easy to separate different frequencies, which causes the feelings of happiness or the feelings of sorrow.
Fridays from 2 to 3:30 p.m., it's the Beppe Crespin Presents radio show.
It's CITR's 24 hours of radio art in a snack-sized format.
Difficult music, harsh electronics, dark ambient, drone, spoken word, cut up collage, and general Crespin weirdness.
Beppe Crespin Presents, Fridays at 2 p.m. on CITR FM 101.9.
Streaming at player.citr.ca.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. Today, I'll be doing a movie review with a guest, a new guest. So please be excited for some new insight. The movie that I didn't choose, but it was recommended by my guest, which is Pitch Perfect. I don't know if you guys were able to watch the movie. It's I would rate it maybe, actually no, I wouldn't rate it. It was a decent movie that I actually got through, so I think this would be a very interesting conversation because it seems like my guest is very passionate about this. So why don't we go ahead and get to the episode. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so hi, my name is Celine. I'm a second year student at UBC, majoring in psychology and minoring in creative writing, which is where I actually met Jeff. But yeah, I was just talking to him about Pitch Perfect because we were talking about movies, and he was like, I have never watched it. And I was like, what?
Yeah, no, I don't really watch a lot of musical movies. I think the last one I watched was High School Musical, and a little bit of the play Hamlet, I think is, it's not a movie, it's a play, but it's in a production style, but that's the only thing that I watched. So it was definitely a new genre I touched on recently. So yeah, I think the first thing I want to talk about, or actually ask you, is simply, did you even like the movie? I don't know what the timeline is with when you watched it, so are you pretty clear with what the movie is about? Any scenes that you remember that stuck with you?
I think I actually watched this movie for the first time in sixth or seventh grade, which is actually pretty young for the themes in it. But I've rewatched this movie at least five times. Yeah, me and my friends, we all enjoy the movie especially. Yeah, it's just like when I watched this when I was younger, I was like, this is what college or university is going to be like. And it kind of just like built my perception of university in a way. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think I get that a lot with not only this movie, but other movies where it portrays, I think, a false sense of reality with what college is actually like. It seems like once you go to college, you're given all these opportunities and these club events that you go to, and you end up stumbling upon it and you realize you're good at it and it's all blossoming. But I realize that college and university is really what you make of it. So I think instead of the opportunities are given to you, it's more so that you have to search for it and really just go out of your comfort space. But yeah, no, Pitch Perfect, for those of you who don't know what the movie is about, it's, and Celine, you're more than welcome to jump in on the summary, but it's about a first-year freshman girl who's named Becca, which I thought was actually a shortened version of her name, but that's her full name, Becca. And she goes into university. I believe that she wants to move to LA to pursue DJing or some sort of music career. And, you know, we all know that LA is kind of that place where the industry really goes off at. And so she wants to go to LA, but her father is almost pressuring her to go to university. And so she goes, and the motivation or the incentive that the father gives her is, yeah, just try something out. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, then I'll move you to LA. And so she goes on this search for being more involved in the university that she attends. And she discovers an a cappella club, which is very, it seems like that's the only thing the university offers in terms of what clubs there are. I thought that it was going to be between Becca's group, which is the girls, and then I forgot the other guy, Jesse and Bumper. I just realized what his name was. Bumper is it? Okay. So Bumper's group. So it's just those two competing against each other. But I found out that there's different groups that touch upon different genres of music. So that was a new thing for me when I saw the movie. So it's like a whole battle of a cappella. And I'm sorry, when I was watching the movie, there are no instrumentals in a cappella other than your voice and I think some snapping noises or anything else that you could do on your own. And I can't stop imagining what it would actually sound like in real life. Mm-hmm. And how kind of funny it might be, especially in the scene where they're like battling in this big hall. But yeah, so she ends up realizing that she's a great singer in the shower. And it's very weird because it's such a vulnerable state for a person, but that's kind of shown as a pivotal moment for her career in university. And so she ends up joining the a cappella group, and there's all these different conflicts that she goes through within her group. And there's like this moral code that they have to go by. And so that's another conflict that arises from there. And then romance at the end. So I hope I summed that up quite nice. Another disclaimer for my shows is I do discuss the movie in depth with my guests. So if you guys don't want any spoilers, maybe go watch the movie now and then come back for the pre-recorded version of it. But I first want to get into the character of Becca. So Celine, do you have any initial impressions of Becca? Do you possibly see any resemblance with her in your own personality, in your own life? How is that for you?
Okay, so Becca is kind of seen as this loner when we first see her in the movie. Her roommate, Kimmy, we don't really know about her, and she's not really friends with Kimmy at all. So all she kind of has on this campus is herself and her dad, who's a professor. But we kind of have this estranged relationship between the two of them because her dad, from my acknowledgement, divorced her mother and, you know, moved on. And so Becca in this movie is kind of by herself. She kind of has this like emo loner type thing going on for her. And I feel like that's also why she was so hesitant in joining the Barden Bellas, only because Chloe and Audrey are very like preppy, very, hey, like, you know?
Yeah.
And Becca's just kind of just like, hey, you know? So I feel like that's kind of how we see Becca in the first movie. But as she's in the Barden Bellas, we kind of see her grow as a person and kind of accept her new friends, even though at first she didn't really want to. She kind of meets friendship with Amy and then also with Jesse, which I think is really crucial in the movie itself. But then, yeah, and then we kind of see in the ending of the movie how they've all kind of come together and formed this kind of sisterhood thing.
Yeah, I think the friendship dynamic was very interesting to see in the movie because the recruitment process, which is actually one of my favorite scenes in the movie, was very funny because there were so many different people that were auditioning for the show and they ended up choosing which is ironic, the most different people ever. Like, each of the members in the group, what's the name? I don't even remember their name. I think you mentioned it a couple times.
The
Bargain Bellas. The Bardin Bellas.
Mm-hmm.
And so each of them have a different, distinct characteristic within themselves. I think one of the strongest characters that I liked, actually, very enjoyed, is Amy. I'm not going to call her Fat Amy because that's what she tells people to call her, which I thought was very humorous. I think that was honestly a brilliant idea to actually just open up and prevent any bullying from happening to her. But anyways, I think she's a very strong character. And then we have the really quiet character, which I don't even know why she was included, because you can't hear her, or maybe you can have, like, you can see a small difference when she's performing. But Lily. And then obviously we have the very controlling Aubrey, which I think was one of the characters that resembled in a way with Becca's character, because I think Aubrey's obsession with having this, I think, traditional sense of performance reflects on how Becca is just so focused on her life and her dream of going to LA. And I think the change that Aubrey brings into the movie throughout, with her acceptance with Becca's ideas and her performances, her performance methods, we can kind of see simultaneously Becca enjoying where she's at with university and what she's doing. I didn't watch the next two movies that are out. Apparently it doesn't hit up to par with the first one, but I think the first one was great. I think the themes of friendship and teamwork were very central in the movie, but I think the aspect of love that was with Jesse, which I actually very enjoyed, was really what combined those two groups together. So I want to ask you, with what do you think was the reason the movie implemented this romance? Because I feel like it was a very subtextual romance, where the movie isn't implied to be a romantic comedy, but it kind of turns out it is. And so do you think that it served the movie well, or do you think it was something that could have been absent? What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I think the reason why I love Pitch Perfect so much is because of the romance in it. Personally, like, everyone who I've talked to who've seen the movie love Jesse. They're like, Jesse is the man, he's number one, you know, great things about Jesse. And I think this incorporation of Jesse and Becca's dynamic really played into like the conflict in the movie itself, especially with regionals, and then I think it was the one before the finals, when Becca and Jesse had this really big fight before the troublemakers went on stage, because Audrey was like, why would you ruin our performance? Like, you messed everyone up. And then she was like, yeah, I know you and Jesse are hooking up as well. And then Jesse just comes out of nowhere. It's like, whoa, we're not doing anything. And Becca kind of gets mad because she's like, why are you always here? Like, I don't need you to help me. I don't need you to, like, fight my fights, all that. And it kind of just, like, blew over. And, like, Becca kind of left the Bardin Bellas for a period of time. And her and Jesse just didn't talk. I think it really, like, incorporated into the story and the storyline of how, like, conflict with Jesse kind of, what would I say, like, also incorporated the conflict within Becca and Audrey. Yeah. And I feel like also her trying to make up with the Bellas and then trying to make up with Jesse also kind of mashed together in a way.
Yeah, I think the relationship between Becca and Jesse seemed like it was just them, but it actually trickled down to all the members in the group, which I think is a great way to really bring the characters together, because you kind of assume that when it's a romance genre movie that it's centralized between two characters, but you end up seeing the character development spreading across the people that the protagonist is working with. And then we kind of see the theme of the search for identity, which is very clear with Becca. And I think the background of college and university really brings this theme to life, because one thing that I learned when I went to university is you really are alone in a sense, because everyone is beyond that same goal, or at least the majority of the students who kind of had that same goal of pursuing a post-secondary education or further studies, whether it was through university or any other institutions that they choose to go to. And then you get there and now you're almost clueless with what other paths are open to you. And so at the same time, you're kind of isolated in an environment where there's a lot of resources, but you don't know about. So I think the fact that the movie was placed in a college really blossoms the whole idea of searching for identity and belonging. And I think, which is weird, is I think the, what was the group's name again? The
Barden Bellas.
The Barton Bellas.
Barden.
The Barden Bellas also found their own true identity and belonging with Becca. Mm-hmm. Because I think the only person that was really fixated on the performance solely on that was Aubrey. And through that, she was pushing away the people that were important to her that she just couldn't see because of her obsession. And through Becca, I think the whole group was able to find belonging within each other and then kind of go along with Jesse. Mm-hmm. Throughout the movie, was there anything that you found was very humorous or funny that you liked, just simply that you liked, or helped pull out the main themes of what the movie is trying to portray?
I don't know about like funny, but I really enjoyed the Britpop, which is like the scene where they're kind of in this like empty swimming pool just singing mashups, but also it was kind of like I know all the lyrics to that section. I actually know all the lyrics to all the songs they sing in this movie.
Now you know it now?
Yes.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah, so like I know all the lyrics, so do my friends. But I really enjoyed the riff off only because it kind of started to touch upon the fact that this was like a place for bringing people together. You kind of saw that when like Becca started singing her part, and then I think one of the other groups, I think it was like the Sopranos, started joining in with them. And then when Becca starts singing at first, she's kind of alone. She doesn't really know, like, no one really knows what's going on. And then Amy joins in, and then the rest of the Barden Bellas kind of join in, and they all kind of, like, group together, and we finally see this, like, uniform of the group where we didn't see beforehand. And then we see Aubrey kind of just, like, on the side being like, okay, like, I'm kind of just going to go along with this because I don't know what they're doing. And then we see, like, Jesse also encouraging Becca to, like, you know, go ahead, like, sing what you want to sing. And I think that point of the movie was very crucial in showing some themes. I also think it was, like, great dynamic between just, like, Jesse and Becca, just, like, the little bits where he's just, like, encouraging her. And then we kind of see this, like, loner side of her when she's first just singing. And then this, like, this friendship that has evolved where the rest of her group joins. So yeah,
I think what I actually, first of all, you know the Cup song?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that was where it originated from.
Oh my god.
Because I remember specifically in elementary school there were a bunch of girls who were obsessed with using cups to sing that song. I think it's mm-hmm. literally called the Cup song.
Yeah.
And I just realized that I watched the music video, which they actually created, and that's Becca.
Yeah.
I did not know that. And it's so interesting how she used the song, a cup song, mm-hmm. as her audition. What do you think is... why do you think that that was the piece she chose, or what reason do you think she chose that simple, like mundane, like effortless piece as her audition? Okay, because yeah. I just think it's so ironic.
Mm-hmm. I actually, oh my God, this is going to sound so nerdy of me, but within that audition itself, like the entire audition, me and my friends, we know like the different levels of like how the each person sings it. So you know how it like cuts through.
Okay.
So we can like literally like imitate each person. It's really silly, but I actually quite love that song too. But I think Becca choosing the cup song was kind of just like showing her like loner side, you know?
Okay.
Because it's like everyone else knows like what song they need to bring for this audition. They've prepared it. And then Becca, who literally was ambushed in the showers, you know, she's just like, sure, I'll come to auditions. And then she sees everyone being like, you know, belting the song. And then she's just like, hey, like, I don't have anything prepared, so let me just use this cup and whatever. And I think a part of that is also with her DJ aspect, in a way where she incorporates like different sounds, different songs, things you wouldn't really imagine together. Because I don't think anyone would have thought of, you know, using a cup and then singing. So I think that also incorporates into like her prior knowledge of DJ, where she wants to add new sounds, new music, and new, I would say, like a new development of a song itself.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I think that cup song brought out a sense of uniqueness within her character, because like you said, the audition is seen as a very serious audition with a set out schedule. There are pieces that you need to come prepared for, and then she comes with a cup song. The cup isn't even hers, and she's late. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of brings out the loner side, but I think it also brings out how she's just so independent with who she is. And that's kind of the starting point with her journey throughout the movie. I think it's also, for me, I really liked where they were working together in the stadium with Aubrey, and this was before Becca came
like
in.
Rehearsal? Mm-hmm,
the rehearsal. And I found it kind of funny. I don't know if this is mean or not, but it was kind of funny how they were rehearsing, and then she comes in and she was about to leave, and then Aubrey's like, yeah, but stop. And she's like, oh my God, it would have been so awkward if you.
Yeah.
I just love that whole bantering dynamic of like comedy sprinkled in here and there, and how Aubrey seeming like a very cold and just very stuck up person can actually show a sense of vulnerability within the characters between. Was there anything that you enjoyed about those banters between either the characters or with Jesse or even with Bumper? Because I feel like he seems like an antagonist, mm-hmm. but for me, I think he's almost like one of those goofy guys that are trying to like puff up. But mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like he's actually trying to sabotage their career in any way.
In a way, I guess. Speaking of Bumper, he actually got his own show. I think on Prime, if I'm not mistaken. I actually have not watched it myself. But after Pitch Perfect 3, they pitched a show to the actor, and he said yes. So he has his own show now. But
is it music related?
I think it is. It follows like Bumper, but I honestly have no idea how. It wasn't that, I don't think it was advertised that much, so I don't really know exactly, but it's crazy to see how like this kind of side character gets his own show in a way. But yeah, I think Bumper actually was a significant point in the movie, only because him leaving actually allowed Benji to come in. And I thought Benji was actually like this, like he's such a small character in the movie, but he makes such a big impact. Benji, you know, didn't get into the troublemakers because he was kind of seen as like too weird, a little too nerdy, you know. And then he, you know, helps out in any way he can with this a cappella group because he, you know, idolized them kind of. And then so I think it was semifinals, so right before the finals, he saw that one of the rival teams had a high school student instead of a college student. And he's kind of the reason why the Barton Bellas got to the finals. And then kind of why Becca was then back into the group. So, like, Benji, my man, you know? I was actually really sad when technically the Troublemakers didn't win the finals with Benji in it. Only because I feel like a lot of people saw this as, like, oh, they're no good without Bumper. But then I was like, the Bellas did such a good performance, right? But yeah, God, I don't even know how we got to this topic.
Yeah, no, I think it's all connecting. I also loved Benji as well. I think he represents how, or it's trying to say through his character that uniqueness doesn't always equate to like a negative connotation, because I think that's what the flaw was between Bumper is they were, same with Aubrey, is that they try to seek people that fit into this mold of their own perception, and when it's a little different, they immediately associate that with something that just doesn't belong.
Yeah.
And I think when Benji was able to come back in to the Troublemakers, and then Becca being able to incorporate her own, I think she used a mix, right, in the mm-hmm. last performance that she created. I think that both shows aware how uniqueness shines light and how it's not something you should be ashamed of. Branching off of this, I want to go into the representation of her, Becca's DJing, mm-hmm. and her relationship with the person, I forgot his name, but she gives him her pieces to like listen to,
yes.
and review. I don't know if he's responsible for distributing those works mm-hmm. or using it in any sense, but in the beginning it seems like he was neglecting the works that Becca was giving her,
yeah.
giving him, and later on he kind of accepts it,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time she doesn't pursue it, but she pursues
yeah
a cappella. So what do you think about that scene? Do you think that has any sort of behind meaning behind why she kind of gets the opportunity finally, but then she ends up not taking it?
I think it's kind of because she found a middle ground of DJing and then like just finding out that she loved a cappella in a way, only because I feel like she incorporates a lot of her DJ, like her style of DJ, into a cappella, because she does a lot of remixes, and we see especially in like the final scene, basically she's remixed so many songs together, and she uses a cappella to kind of like distribute those songs and to share her work with a group of people. I know like the guy, I know who you're talking about, he works at the radio too,
yeah.
just like you.
Just like me, yeah.
But he basically is getting like flash drives from her of her mixes, and then one day he just airs one of her remixes on the radio, and then she gets like super excited, and then I think over spring break Becca is allowed to, you know, start incorporating more of the DJ into her life, only because she doesn't have the Bellas anymore, because she technically was like kind of kicked off but also kind of left on her own will. And then so when she's invited back, I think she kind of found, or no, I guess when she was left or kicked out of the Bellas, she kind of resorted to DJing because it kind of filled that gap of like, oh, I don't have the Barton Bellas anymore, I need something.
Yeah. This is kind of going off topic, but do you know anything about the music industry where, because technically mixing tapes is using other people's
yeah.
works, so I'm assuming you can't really profit off of that because
no.
it's other, okay, so I guess it's just the ability to edit and combine different pieces.
I think so. And I think she like adds in, like she sings some parts or something. She like, you know, because I remember her saying in one of the scenes, like, this is my voice or something like that. And I think she sometimes incorporates herself into the mixes. But yeah, I don't know. When I listen to the radio sometimes, like I know they do like top 40 hits, but I don't know. I know they do some remixing, but I don't exactly know, like, profiting or anything like that.
Yeah, I just thought that, I don't know, I think it's, I mean, mixing songs is definitely a very difficult thing, but I just wondered how that process was like. But for me, I think the reason why the whole scene showing Becca's, not refusal, but kind of moving towards the a cappella career is showcasing how no matter how badly you want something, you don't necessarily need to fail at it to change paths.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of gives a very strong claim with how the movie is like. And also the aspect of college is that you're constantly in this journey of finding what you're good at, finding what you like, and trying different things. And there's always this misconception of when people change paths, it's because they couldn't get into the first one or the one that they wanted in mm-hmm. the beginning. But that's not necessarily the case. So I think for Becca, her continuous efforts with both sides kind of showcases that there's different options available for her. And the fact that she kind of went to a cappella is almost like a fate or like a destiny. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because does she continue to pursue it in the second and third one as deeply as she... Does she become the Aubrey? I don't know.
So in the third movie, spoiler, she actually gets chosen by like DJ Khaled to like basically be her own artist. So she originally started doing like producing in the beginning of the third movie, but she just like there's so much conflict with it that she grouped up with the Bardambellas, and then I don't know, DJ Khaled like hosted this competition and whoever won would basically be like he would represent the artist, kind of like the voice, I would say. So then she got chosen instead of the Bardambellas as a group. She was individually selected. And then she pursues a career in music, but not as a producer, as like a singer, I would say.
Okay, so I guess it kind of... So I guess a cappella is more of a stepping ground, and then she kind of mm-hmm. goes out and branches out to different career paths. Okay, yeah, it's pretty cool. Was there anything about the movie that you thought would have been nice to incorporate, or any missing gaps that you wish that were filled up in terms of the depth of the character development or the personalities of certain characters, or even the lack of showing certain characters mm-hmm. that were kind of like Benji, is that his name?
Benji,
for example.
I honestly loved Benji's like little snippet inside the movie, especially after the audition happened and then people were selected into the groups. They had this kind of like group meetup with like all the a cappella groups, and then the camera like pans over to Benji just in his room, and he can like hear what they're singing, and he's like singing along but like by himself. I don't know, Benji, like in the character of himself, he's just like, he was such a middle ground for everyone and the process and progress of the story that I just feel like it just added like a perfect touch, you know? And like even though he was technically like mostly relevant in like the last couple scenes, I feel like he impacted the movie in so many ways.
Yeah. For me personally, I don't know if it was explicitly stated, and I don't think it was, but what was that insane motivation for Aubrey to succeed? Is because she wanted to perform in some big stage?
I think it was because her dad is like, he's like a military man. And then so he didn't want to see like Aubrey fail in a way. And then since Aubrey had her like puking incident, she really wanted to win.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't even know her father. So it was more of like a, like the ex, like the family pressure that got to her.
I think so,
and she's like, okay, because that's kind of the aspect that I wish I kind of knew more about.
Yeah.
I always want to know more about the supposed antagonist of the characters in the movie, because I think it gives a much better sense of understanding where they're coming from mm-hmm. with how they behave. And you know what? Now that you say that, I think the way that she trained the girls are so
It makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's very
doing,
strict.
Like, cardio and heels, like.
Which I didn't understand. I'm like, I thought you guys were singing.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's a whole workout that she just constructs into this whole performance. So I think that makes sense. But for me, it's more so about the character that we automatically assume as, oh yeah, you're bad and like you're just negative. And I think seeing more of that would have been nice. Lastly, do you have any thoughts of how the first movie ended? And I think it ended with them, the girls winning,
mm-hmm.
and her ending up with Jesse.
Yeah.
Which I actually want to know, spoilers, do they continue on?
Oh my god.
Oh, okay. Is this like a huge...
Oh my god. The third movie, they break up.
Oh.
Yeah. I know, it sucks. I think it was...
Was it because of DJ Khaled?
No, I think it was just because, like, maybe the budget for the film, or they just didn't ask the actor to come back. I don't know exactly why he didn't come back, but he's just not in the third film at all. So I think they just wrote him off as, like, they broke up. So he's in the second movie, but not the third one.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a reason within the movie context.
No.
Oh,
well,
it seems like it's outside.
Yeah, I just know that they broke up and he has a new girlfriend. But but that's all that's said about him. And then like there's this like possible insinuation of a like relationship happening in the third movie with, I think it's like DJ Khaled. I don't know what exactly he is, like maybe like a manager and Becca, but then like Becca's kind of like, it's like, I don't know, it's like on and off.
Okay, that's...
I'm so sad about Jesse and Becca, though.
That is, I think they had great chemistry.
They had amazing chemistry, especially with the movie
of,
like, The Breakfast Club, and how, like, Becca finds it in, like, her little, like, radio, like, place, and she watches it at home and, like, realizes the impact of, like, Jesse's relationship and her, and then, like, her incorporating the song in that movie in the finale, and then, like, it kind of just, like, you know?
That was so romantic.
It was,
yeah,
I loved it.
I love that scene as well. Yeah, no. I think going back to The Breakfast Club, I don't know if I'm just not catching the depth of emotion, but why did she... Because I thought that she cried because of the movie itself. Because the whole idea of The Breakfast Club, which I encourage you now to watch, is about these students who are in detention. And on the outside, they seem... like they have their lives together in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like they each have their own characters. They're all kind of doing their thing. And then they end up in this intimate moment where they show the worries and the anxiety that they always carry around through school that they just never, portray to anyone else. And so at the end, what was his name? Is the really mean guy in Breakfast Club? He jumps up and it, like the screen freezes, and the song comes up, and that's kind of, for me, I kind of felt that scene was showing a sense of like liberation to like himself and his whole character, and I think that's what kind of made Becca realize where she belongs and where she really feels like she can be open, and so. I didn't really connect that too much. I mean, I guess Jesse kind of introduced that movie, but I think that was also connecting towards what she needed to do. And then I believe after that, she went to go apologize, and then they started working again. But yeah, like, did you, because since you didn't watch the movie, did you feel maybe less of a connection to when that movie was referenced, or was it more so about the fact that they were watching a movie that was just so romantic?
So I at first when I watched this movie, I was like, why is she crying? I was so confused, and then I did a little research, and like apparently like The Breakfast Club kind of like represents Becca in a way, and like the way she's kind of like this loner and like no one really knows her, and then she gets with this group and then she's kind of like, you know, this new person, like everyone gets to kind of see this more well-rounded character that she is. And then I think it also contributed to the fact that Jesse was like, I really want to watch this movie with you. And then when she first watched it, she was just like, oh, like whatever. And then when she rewatched it, she was like, damn, like I just lost Jesse, you know, like I had such a good thing going with him, and then like I just let it, like, you know, like disintegrate.
Yeah. I think there's so many things to unpack in the movie with the relationship and how it connects to certain themes. But I don't know. For me, I'm pretty simple when I watch movies. I don't go too much in depth, which I actually have a question I want to ask you about. But when I just saw the reference of The Breakfast Club, I was just happy that they were able to reference a movie within a movie.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't think I've ever seen movies that actually reference movies.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to see. And you said that you research about those things, which I do sometimes, but it's more in the genre of thrillers because I think thriller movies have that ambiguous ending.
Yeah.
But for romantic comedies, it's more so explicit, or even in this movie. But the reason why I don't research too much is because I don't want to shatter that that world of romance and I don't want to say fantasy, but you know, that whole storyline. And I think when I start researching, I start learning about the outsides of the film, of the real people and the industry and all that, and kind of that focus shifts me away from what I enjoyed about the movie and the artwork of that. Does that ever happen with you, or are you more interested in the behind the scenes of a movie?
I don't know. I've watched the behind the scenes of Pitch Perfect. I've seen they have like rehearsals of like their performances. So like all the performances they perform in like the competitions, like you can search it up on YouTube and they'll just literally be in like gym clothes, like this like recreation center looking room where they're just like practicing how they're gonna perform, which kind of shows like, I don't know, I thought it was so cool just to see like the process of creating this, because like in the movie like a cappella comes so easy to them in a way where they can just like, you know, come up with these beats and, you know, cohesively just work all together in like a blink of an eye. But like when you see the behind the scenes, you kind of see that it's like so much effort and work going into creating this movie, which I quite enjoyed. But yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I research about movies, just like questions I have, but sometimes I just like, I'm like, cool, great. Just depends.
Yeah, I think when I watch, that's actually one of the reasons why I never watch trailers before a movie. Are you one of those people who watches trailers?
Yes.
No. The reason why is because when the trailers have, they have to put out certain scenes in the movie. Yeah. And when I go watch the movie, I remember the scenes that I watched in the trailer. And so it's not like an original interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to see the movie as a whole for the first time.
Wow.
So I try not to spoil myself in any way with what I'm about to watch.
That's crazy because I love watching trailers before.
Really? What do you like about watching trailers?
I just want to know what I'm getting into. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like watching trailers, I'll have an inkling of if I'm going to like it or not. And if I don't, like, if the trailer doesn't look that good, I'm like, yeah, maybe I won't watch the movie. I think that's also me with, like, books. Like, judging books by their covers. I do that a lot.
For me, I read
the
storyline
and
the plot line. And then I decide. And the funny thing is that 95% of the time, I know what I enjoy, and when I watch it, I actually do enjoy it. I don't know if it's for you too. There's not many cases where I'm like, this movie sounds not like my type, and then I watch and I'm like, wow, this is, I don't think I have a lot of those experiences. No.
I have some of those experiences. I don't know with what movies. I think more with books, but I feel like especially with movies, I know what I like and what I don't, especially in that, like, I think it was like 2018, 2019 phase of like The Kissing Booth, To All the Boys, you know, that kind of genre, like, after of movies. Like, I was just like, God, can we, like, skip this phase and just go back to, like, what romantic comedies used to be like?
Yeah, no, I think this could go into a whole other episode of comparing romantic comedies between, I'd say, like, the 90s to the early 2000s. And then I think there's a drastic change after like 2015 and onwards or something.
And I know we talked about this, but like we talked about how Anyone But You kind of really brought back this like old theme of like romantic comedies, which I watched that movie like I think 2-3 times too. So
Do you? Oh, yeah, no, we're almost out of time, but I also rewatch a lot of the movies.
Yeah.
Do you have a reason for it?
Well, it's because it's like whenever I watch like a new one, I'm just like, God, this is so bad. And so I'm like, I need to like rewatch something that's good, you know? Like I've rewatched Set Up a couple of times too.
Yeah, no, me too. I think the reason why I mainly rewatch movies is because I love the feeling that the movie gives me.
Yeah, and I agree.
It's like that sense of nostalgia and seeing that chemistry again within the characters. It brings back a good feeling. Anyways, so that's it for the review. 50 or so minutes of reviewing a whole movie is definitely not enough. And so I think we did our best covering up a lot of the aspects that we enjoyed. And I hope you guys enjoyed that. For the last couple of minutes, I actually bring a couple would you rather questions to my guests as a finishing icebreaker. Usually, you know, an icebreaker is in the beginning, but I like to do it at the end to freshen up our brains and kind of end on a smooth note. So what this is going to be like is I'm going to be telling you a couple options of, well, it's a food theme today.
Okay.
And so I'll give you some options and then you just need to choose one within a couple seconds, whichever you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we get into it? So would you rather eat one ghost pepper a month or three lemon shots three times a day, every day?
Three lemon shots.
Do you like lemon?
I love lemons. I love limes.
Like pure, just like lemon?
My water right now, it's lemon water.
Okay. Oh, okay. Do you like the sourness of it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you like sour stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I just love the taste of like limes and lemons.
Okay. Would you rather eat an unripe pineapple or an unripe kiwi?
Oh, an unripe pineapple.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think I might go with the kiwi on this one. I don't really like pineapple.
I don't know. I like both of them, but they both give you like that taste in your mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like a bitterness. Yeah. Do you eat the skin of the kiwi by any chance? Okay, there's people who do that. No. I don't know.
I would not like the texture.
I don't think either. Like that furry.
No.
Okay. Only eat the noodles and pho or only eat the insides of a sandwich?
Oh, noodles and pho.
Okay. I guess that was... Oh, how about... What if it was only eat the soup and pho and only the insides of a sandwich?
Soup and pho. I really like pho.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sandwiches are so, I don't know, boring.
I don't know if you had a wonderful sandwich before, but I love sandwiches. I mean, do you drink the soup and pho?
Yeah.
Oh, I never do.
What?
Yeah, like, I just eat the insides.
You don't have a little broth with a little bit of noodles?
Maybe twice?
Oh,
I do that twice. No, I don't drink a lot of that.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I just think after I drink the soup, I have to drink like a gallon of water after.
They work so hard for the soup itself.
I think, yeah.
But it's like the bone. You have to like wait like a day or two.
I'm just so thirsty after.
That's true.
Always drink a liter of milk every meal.
Oh, wow.
Or, this one's an easy one for you, though. So I'll make it a bit harder. Or three limes before every snack.
Oh, my God. You see, I don't really drink milk. It's a problem with me.
Are you lactose intolerant?
No, I'm not. I just like, I don't look for milk. I don't like seek milk in that way.
Like in general? Like in not general. Almond milk? Or...
No. Okay. Like I try not to drink a lot of coffee.
Okay.
Which, you know, as a student, like, thank God.
It can be, yeah.
But also like, oh my God. But I don't know. Like the milk I bought, I think like maybe like 3 weeks. It expired, I think like a week ago. Like there's still some left. Unfortunately to say, but there's a little bit left and I cannot drink all of it. And it was only like a liter.
Oh.
So I would definitely have to go with a lime.
Ooh, okay. Use only organic maple syrup as your only sweetener for the rest of your life.
Oh, wow.
Or honey, but it's those honeys that are solid. Not the liquidy honey that you can just like put up like jam. It's the solid honey.
But so, is it like honeycomb?
No. It's not honeycomb. It's a very thick consistency.
It's like when like honey like crystallizes, right?
Yeah.
I hate when that happens.
So you have to choose one as your main sweetener for the rest of your life.
I don't know. I don't think the first one would be terrible. Wait, was it maple syrup?
Organic maple syrup. Oh. So it's a healthier option.
I don't know. I think I would low-key go with the honey. I actually, this is going to sound controversial as a Canadian, but I don't really remember what maple syrup tastes like.
Wait, when was the last time you had pancakes?
I don't know, a while.
Oh, I love pancakes.
I don't know, like, what, like, I can't remember what maple syrup tastes like, which is like...
Okay. Okay, the next one is, eat pastries once every 2 months,
mm-hmm.
or have at least 3 pastries every day.
Oh my god, I would have to go with the first option.
Oh, do you not crave pastries as often?
I do, but 3 times a day sounds excessive.
Yeah, it is. I mean, considering, yeah, if I could maintain my physique, then.
I don't know if you like the Costco croissants.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I put those in the air fryer, or I used to, when I used to have them, I just ran out. I put them in the air fryer, and then I put on like Nutella and like cut some strawberries, and it's so good.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That one's... Oh, yes. Okay, the last one is, always have onion rings as your side or fries?
Fries. Of course. Okay. Fries.
Okay. This one, it was a hard one for me because I don't know which one I would choose. Onion rings are just too good. Anyways, thank you, Celine, for coming on my show today. You are more than welcome to come back. I hope you had some fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for today, everyone. My name is Jeff, and I'll see you all next week. Bye, everyone.